The Green Bay Packers have lost 4 out of their last 5 games, including one to the Detroit Lions at Lambeau Field. Can they get revenge and beat the Lions on their own home turf? We'll examine that game with Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're getting ready for a game this upcoming Thursday, I'm used to Sunday games, against the Detroit Lions. To help preview that game, we have us joining us as he does every week.
Expert interview.
We have Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com. Nathan, how you doing this morning?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good. Glad to have you. If we kind of look back one last time at this Packers loss to the Chicago Bears last week, we haven't had you on since the game. I know it's kind of almost, you know, we're getting 6 days past the game here, but regardless, Nathan, I thought the performance turned in by Devontae Adams this past week was very poor, and I really haven't been all that impressed for much of the season. How is Devontae Adams stacking up against other wide receivers in the NFL?
First off, I definitely agree with you that there was a poor performance out of Adams in this past game. Anytime that you have more drop passes than you do caught passes, that's a big problem. So on the year as a total, we have him at a PFF rating of 50.6, which we have 60 at replacement level. So theoretically, the Packers should have been able to find a street free agent who would have been able to play better than Adams this year. And on the season as a whole, he has the second lowest grade of all wide receivers who have played at least 300 pass plays this year, eighth lowest out of those who have played at least 200. So definitely hasn't been a strong performance out of Adams all season.
That's unfortunate to hear that. And, you know, as a second-round draft choice and a guy who's obviously has some raw talent, as we saw in college, hopefully he turns it around. Unfortunately, another guy who's not playing all that well. I was thinking to myself that Richard Rodgers has been one of the worst tight ends I've ever seen in terms of gaining yards after the catch. How does he compare to other tight ends in the NFL from that standpoint in terms of yards after the catch?
On the season as a whole, he has 162, which is 18th most per tight ends, which obviously that's influenced by him having a decent number of catches this year as well. So looking at yards after the catch per catch, he is at 4.1, which is a little lower than the league average for tight ends, which is 4.8. Which part of why you might be thinking that, though, is a lot of his good games with yards after the catch came at the beginning of this season, where later in the season he hasn't been doing nearly as well with that. In four of his first six games, he was having 4.7 yards per catch or better, so above league average in a lot of those early games. But then in four of the last five, he's had 2.8 yards after the catch per catch or worse, so a lot lower than league average these past few games. And then part of just his yards per catch total numbers as well. He's been catching the ball closest to the line of scrimmage compared to a lot of other tight ends in the league. He's averaging just 3.2 yards before the catch per catch, which is amongst the lowest in the league, and I would say the lowest out of all tight ends who aren't considered to be run-blocking specific tight ends.
Interesting stats. Better than I thought in terms of yards after the catch, but not great by any means. But maybe I should lay off him a little bit. But Nathan, if we look at some positives, I actually thought that outside of the pass catchers this past game, that the Packers offense did fairly well against the Bears. Would you agree that the offensive line played well? And how odd was it to see the total offense struggle when the line plays well?
Yeah, I would say that's even an understatement. I think the offensive line did an excellent job in this one. All five offensive linemen we graded above average in both run blocking and pass blocking. So all five of them did well in both phases for the game. TJ Lang we graded out as the best guard this past week. Josh Benton and JC Treader were both among the top five at their position. So a great job all around, which, to be fair, the Bears defensive line is made up of one rookie and then four players who were all free agents that their old teams didn't really want anymore. So not the strongest defensive line that they were going up against. But in terms of how rare it is to see an offense struggle when the offensive line is doing so well, typically in the run game, if an offensive line is blocking so well, the running back has life easy for him. So as long as he isn't fumbling the ball, he should have a fine game. But we do find it a little bit more common in the pass game, since even if a quarterback does have a clean pocket, the passing game with both him and his receivers can struggle some.
I guess the same goes for the running backs outside of one fumble. I thought that both Eddie Lacy and James Starks played pretty well. Do you think the Packers should have stuck with the running game even more than they did this past week?
Outside of Lacy's fumble, I think both of them had fine games. Like I was saying, I think it probably had a little bit more to do with the offensive line than the running back. They were averaging nearly 3 yards before contact per carry, which any running back would love to see. But even with that, the running backs, they did a fine job, especially Lacy. I think it was the second offensive play of the game. Had a really nice play, had two guys miss tackles on him and gained some decent yards there. So I do think the Packers should have stuck with the run more given how well the run game was going. But while on the topic of running back, something else I found interesting is this was the first game that the Packers were really able to get Lacy involved with the passing game again. And for the past five games, he was held to just one catch and fewer than 10 yards, with that one exception being just a two-catch game and fewer than 20 yards, where in this one he was targeted five times and had four catches, and one was for a touchdown. And last year, Lacy was one of the best receiving backs in football, so getting him involved in the passing game again might help with some of their other offensive problems going forward.
Yeah, maybe an indication that he's finally getting a little bit more healthy, too. Hopefully that's the case. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, if we look at the defensive side of the football, I thought the player that maybe had the best performance last week was Quinton Rollins, and he really didn't play all that much, at least compared to his peers. Does that indicate he's maybe in line for a bigger role?
I agree with you. He definitely had one of the best performances among the players on defense. He was only thrown at twice, and on those plays, he had a pass defense, which very well could have been intercepted. And then another play where he hit the receiver while the receiver could have caught the ball. So he basically forced the incompletion, which was good to see as well. And then on top of that, he rushed the passer three times, had a sack in a hurry. So getting that much pressure on that few pass rushes is also good to see. So in terms of his playing time, I would definitely consider playing him in the dime defense over Micah Hyde, just to see how much more Rollins can do. And then even looking ahead a little bit more, I believe Casey Hayward's a free agent at the end of the season, and I wouldn't be terribly surprised if he leaves. So giving Rollins a chance to see what he could do in the nickel defense potentially might be a good idea, just because that very well could be his role next season.
Yeah, with Micah Hyde being injured, that's probably going to come to fruition here, that Rollins will at least play in the dime, if not a bigger role. Unfortunately, Rollins was the only player to get a sack last week. If we look at the struggles of the Packers' pass rush, who up front especially is not winning their battles?
The first player that I'd look at is Mike Neal. He had the second most pass rushes for the Packers this past week, but he failed to get any sacks, hits, or hurries in this game. And he's someone who, in general, hasn't played as well as a pass rusher. He has played well against the run, both in general and this past game. But as a pass rusher, he's among the bottom five, three, four outside linebackers in terms of how much pressure he gets compared to how often he rushes the passer. Outside of him, Julius Peppers, he only had one pressure, and he had a couple of sacks those first couple of games of the season. I think it was five sacks, or having five games where he had a sack in those first six games, and then I think just one sack in these past five games or so. B.J. Rodgers is another player who his best two games rushing the passer were those first two games of the season. And then Daden Jones, specifically in this game, I believe it was his first game without getting a pressure this season. So there was a number of their pass rushers who either haven't been playing well recently or just had a bad game specifically in this one.
Yeah, things have really cooled off in the pass rush department since earlier in the season. Unfortunate to see, and an unfortunate trend for the Packers. Nathan, I was once again surprised to see Mike Daniels receive the highest grade from Pro Football Focus last week, probably because, you know, I didn't notice him because he's out there doing the dirty work, but what led to Daniels' high grade?
First off, as a pass rusher, he only had four pressures in this game, but all four of them were fairly impressive plays where he was able to get that pressure very early on in the play. And for one, that's impressive, and two, it also disrupts the quarterback much earlier and disrupts whatever the offense was trying to do. So whenever you're able to get a pressure that early in the play, we definitely grade that well. And then in the run game, he had two tackles for no gains, another for a short gain, so those three were all good plays. And then there were several other times where he was able to stand up the offensive lineman across from him at the line of scrimmage, which sometimes if the run was supposed to go that way, that forced the running back to make a cut somewhere else. Or if the running back was already going somewhere else, it at least prevented him from cutting back to that area that Daniels was at. So he played very well in both the run game and pass game. And a lot of defensive linemen, they're good at just one of those and not both of those. And Daniels has been good at both and very consistent at both week after week. So at this point, he's moved his way up to the top five amongst all interior defenders in the league, which includes Watt, Aaron Donald, Lindahl Joseph, and Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah, very impressive season for Mike Daniels, perhaps even Pro Bowl caliber. It would be very deserving if he were to get that. We'll see. We'll see. Nathan, as we take a look ahead to this Lions game, I guess what I'm interested in knowing more than anything is what is this team doing so much better now during their winning streak that they weren't doing early in the season?
The biggest thing is Matthew Stafford is just playing a lot better. After the first 5 weeks of the season, he was by far the lowest graded quarterback in the league at that point. But since that point, he's been playing like a top 10 quarterback in the league. And I'm guessing at least part of that is the offensive line has found a little bit more stability than it did early in the season. Their first round pick, Laken Tomlinson, has been playing a little bit better for them at guard. And then Michael Ola has taken over the right tackle spot. The right tackles before him weren't playing well at all. And Ola has started to play better each and every week that he's been seeing significant playing time. And then on defense, they've started to have a few injuries in the secondary. But the big thing that I noticed as a difference from early in the season and more recently is their cornerback, Darius Slay. He was someone who was playing fine the first part of the season, but he's really stepped up his game since then and since week six. We have him as the second highest rated cornerback in the league from week six on. So he's been playing very well as well. So a couple of different players for the Lions who have stepped up their game and why they've been playing a lot better.
I think Darius Slay was the guy who shut out James Jones in that first meeting this season. So good play from him. They're going to have to watch out. Nathan, for those people who maybe haven't been listening for a long time, don't know a whole lot about Pro Football Focus, would you mind telling them about it and how they can get involved more with a subscription at Pro Football Focus?
Sure. At Pro Football Focus, we grade every player on every play in every game. So we have a much better idea of how players are playing compared to just their statistics. And then we also keep track of a lot more statistics as well that the NFL doesn't keep track of for defensive players, not just how many sacks they have, but their hits and their hurries as well, which offensive player gave those up. We also have coverage numbers, so not just the receiver that got the yards and the yards after the catch and the touchdowns and whatnot, but also for defenders, how many yards they give up, how many catches they give up, how often they're targeted. So we keep track of all of those numbers. We have a premium section where you can see all of the player grades. We have them graded on a 0 to 100 scale and a couple of different categories. You can also see team's roster, how everyone on their roster is playing, how players are playing compared to players at their position. We also have detailed depth charts, which show not just starters in general, but starters in each different formation. So some teams, they have a running back that plays in two tight end sets and a different running back that'll play in three wide receiver sets. And we have different options to see the depth charts to see those. We have plenty of content on the website as well, articles going up all the time, including video. And then we also have the fantasy section. We have some of the most accurate fantasy projections out there, and we have plenty of fantasy content if that's also what you're into. So you can get that at Pro Football Focus as well.
Very cool. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Enjoy the game tomorrow, and we'll recap it with you next week.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does every Wednesday here on the show. Great to have his insight and analysis. Great to have you, the listener, joining us as well as we continue on with the show.
Packers news of the day.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, just rounding up a couple items here before we get to a prediction by myself on the upcoming game. Julius Peppers, kind of an interesting character this week, appeared on Monday's injury report, the first of the week released by the Packers, kind of curiously, and it wasn't as if he wasn't even injured. He was right on the injury report. It said not injury related, but they pretty much, you know, list everybody who missed practice, no matter what. Even, you know, sometimes a player's wife has a baby, and you know, if he misses practice, they'll note that on the injury report just to note that he was gone. But anyway, you know, kind of curious because this is the first time since Julius Peppers has been signed, you know, prior to the 2014 season that he's missed a regular season practice. I mean, this is a guy who doesn't miss anything. The last game Julius Peppers missed, whether he's been wearing the green and gold or not, you know, this was 2007. This, you know, that he played every single game he ever, you know, was with the Chicago Bears for. This was all the way back when he was with the Carolina Panthers. He just doesn't miss. He's a freak of nature. So to see him on the injury report, see that he was withheld from practice on Monday was kind of curious, and you wondered why. And Mike McCarthy later on the next day, Tuesday, kind of said that it was a coach's decision. And I think the Packers are just seeing a guy who's 35 years old. They see that his body is, you know, in need of, you know, some time in the shop, so to speak. I don't know that he needs treatment or anything like that. Maybe he does in terms of just, you know, the hot tub, cold tub and massages and those kind of things. Every player could use those. But just needing some time off to recover, given his age, considering that he's going to be 36 next month. And, you know, he's a guy they rely on. And the more they kind of, you know, keep him rested up so he can turn it on game days, that's probably a good thing. Because we're looking at the end of Julius Peppers' career. I mean, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves. You know, he's under contract through next season. And, you know, I would tend to believe right now that he would play through next season. But I wouldn't be terribly surprised if Julius Peppers just happens to retire this offseason. I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if it did. You know, we'll see. We'll see. But anyway, regardless, for the moment being, I mean, he's the Packers still very much relying on him. Maybe not as much as they once did, or as Julius Peppers may have played earlier in his career, playing pretty much every snap. They've cut back on that in an effort to keep him fresh. But yeah, so sat out on Monday. was back on Tuesday, was taken off the injury report, but just kind of weird to see that happen with this longtime veteran who's, you know, pretty much, you know, he's a pros pro. He's out there day in, day out. And, you know, how much of an influence does that have to be on his young teammates who see, you know, what kind of work ethic he has to even, you know, I'm sure he has nagging injuries like everybody does in the NFL, but he's out there every day. You know, what kind of example does that set for the young players on the team who see that and see what it takes to be an 8-time Pro Bowler in the NFL? So great to have a guy like Julius Peppers on the Packers roster. He deserves a day off at his age, and hopefully he gets back on track because, you know, another reason, he really hasn't been playing all that well during this, you know, this streak where the Packers have lost 4 out of 5 games. He had 5 sacks in the first 6 games of the season. He has half a sack in the last 5 games for the Green Bay Packers. They need him to be more of a pass rush threat on a more consistent basis than they've gotten out of him recently. Hopefully the mini bye week that's coming up here will help in regards to that as well. But in other news, kind of the other big story this week, busy week for Andrew Quarles for a couple reasons. First of all, it was he returned to practice for the first time since being placed on injured reserve. We'll get to that in a moment. But also on Monday, 4 months after the incident, 4 months, this case got pushed back 4 times in court, and he ends up just pleading no contest. I mean, he could have done this right away, I think. I don't know. It's kind of weird that, you know, this case is pushed back 4 times. 11 people were subpoenaed in this case. He doesn't even show up. He just pleads no contest. He gets 1 year's probation. He gets a $1,000 fine. He has to take an anger course and a weapons course, and he had to forfeit his gun. All things considered, Andrew Quarles got off pretty lightly here, I think. He's still subject to discipline from the NFL, but seeing as he wasn't even really disciplined all that heavily in a court of law, I'm not sure the NFL is going to, you know, have all that much to add. I mean, if we're looking at anything, what are we looking at? 1 game maybe for Andrew Quarles? I doubt even that. I just don't. I think the NFL is going to pass here and going to see a guy who this is the first time, at least since he's gotten involved with the law, since he's been a pro. I know there was some minor issues there in college that, yeah, I'm not sure anything really came to that. There was some issue with drugs. I think we're talking marijuana in college. Something about him and his the people he was living with. So there was question whether it was even his. That's a long time ago. So anyway, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot coming here from the NFL. If it does, yeah, I think people are wondering, you know, when's the NFL going to bring down the hammer? I don't know. I have no clue. And even if they do, Andrew Quarles has the right to an appeal, and that would push back maybe the time frame. Maybe we're not looking at anything until the offseason here. I mean, because there's really not a whole lot left. You got basically a month left in the regular season, just a little bit more than the playoffs. I don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, like I said, I don't think it's probably a priority for the NFL anyway. But Andrew Quarles, regardless, the same day he settles his court case is the day he comes back from injured reserve. He's the one player on the designated for return list. He's still on injured reserve. Technically, he can practice. There's a window he can practice without having to be activated, which makes sense. You know, any team you would like to see where a player is at before being forced to put him on the 53-man roster, and they don't even have to. If you remember back to, it was what, 2 seasons or 3 seasons ago, Packers had Cedric Benson. They used their one, you know, designated to return, you know, tag or whatever on him. And they never did end up activating him. He never was quite healthy enough to return. I don't think that's the case with Andrew Quarles, but I'm just saying that's a good thing that they give him this window to kind of determine where they're at. So Andrew Quarles is eligible to be activated. The Packers don't have to do it in time for Thursday's game. They may not. I wish I had some insight there, but I don't. I'm inclined to think maybe they won't, just simply from the fact that, you know, nothing to do with his legal troubles or anything. He tore the MCL in his knee. I mean, this is way back at the end of September, a long time ago. He's probably recovered by now. But, you know, if you err on the side of caution, they kind of get their mini bye week after the Lions game here. They kind of get a week and a half off until the next game. It's just going to give that much longer for Andrew Quarles to kind of recover from that. So we'll see. Like, I have really no feeling here. The Packers could certainly use a little bit more at tight end position. We talked about Richard Rodgers with Nathan Jahnke earlier in the show, and I was kind of surprised how, you know, how average, I guess, Richard Rodgers is doing. I thought he'd be far, far below average. He's just kind of league average. And, you know, maybe I'm kind of influenced because the past several weeks really have been poor for him. Andrew Quarles has always been one of those guys that I thought is reliable. He's not like this huge pass catching threat. But he's, when they throw the ball his way, he always seems to, you know, do what you think he should be able to do with it. It's just kind of what you expect is what happens out of Andrew Quarles. He's not a superstar, not a Pro Bowler, and he's probably a better blocker, more importantly, than Richard Rodgers. So they could really use his help out there, you know, assuming he's healthy enough to contribute. And that's kind of the question that you're still kind of wondering, whether, you know, is Andrew Quarles going to be 100% or is he only going to be 90 out there? Because that ain't helping if he's out there and, you know, he's still not at full capacity or anything like that. So we'll find out more with him. But if we kind of look at this upcoming game against the Detroit Lions and my two cents here on what's going to happen, I kind of alluded to this the last show, and I've kind of been in the glass half full kind of mode of thinking. You know, I thought the Packers would bounce back from those two losses from the Broncos and Carolina Panthers, two teams that were undefeated at the time. And the Panthers still are. The Packers would bounce back, especially at home, and they didn't. They lost to the Lions and other teams, now to the Bears. And, you know, I thought they would win that Lions game. I thought they would win the Bears game, both games being at home. I don't know where I'm at with this team right now. And like I said, I alluded to this earlier, you're worried about the offense more than anything. Not that there aren't other issues on this Packers team, but this is just, you know, for so long, this has been a high-octane offense under Mike McCarthy and quarterback Aaron Rodgers for so long, for years, for the better part of a decade now. That, you know, that you just expect them to put points up and yards up, and it's not happening this season. And I wonder if what's going, the cure for what ails them is going to be playing in this domed environment where it's going to be perfect conditions, and these wide receivers will be able to make a little bit crisper cuts on the turf as opposed to playing on the grass and playing on a cold surface that might be frozen and you don't have great footing or things like that. Maybe that's what it takes. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say the Packers are going to win this game because they're going to do a lot of scoring and they're going to win something along the lines of 30-24. I'm going to say Packers win by 6 points, 30-24. And I've been bitten before, and I'm not exactly confident in this prediction because of how poorly they've looked, you know, losing 4 out of 5 games. And I'm not saying they're going to turn the tide or anything, because then I know they're going to have to go back onto that cold turf at Lambeau Field, and maybe, you know, we're going to see the old Davante Adams and Randall Cobb and James Jones, and they're not going to be able to get any separation once they return to Lambeau Field. But for some reason, I just feel like this is the Packers should be able to exploit this defense. That's, you know, Darius Slay, yeah, he's playing all right, and but you know they've lost so much. They've lost DeAndre Levy. They've lost Ndamukong Suh from last season. I mean, those guys were studs. They were among the best players at their position. Nick Fairley, throw him in there, and that this Lions defense doesn't have that caliber of player anymore. And I think they should be able to put up points on this team, and you know, maybe this is the week it happens, and I hope it just continues to be that way. Let's see where the Packers are at after this week, and then we'll assess where they go later in the season. But I'm going out on a limb, 30-24. I'm saying this team is too good to be this bad, but who knows at this point. So Packers, I hope you got it in you, and I hope we're seeing you get hot as the season comes to a close. It's something they've done, you know, quite a bit during the Mike McCarthy era. It, you know, close hot, take momentum into the playoffs, and you know, more often than not, make the playoffs, which is better than a lot of NFL teams. Not perhaps as always go deep in the playoffs as you want as a fan, but at least they're doing it. They're getting there, you know, winning some games. Sometimes you'd like them to get to the Super Bowl or, you know, at least the championship game. Doesn't always happen, but we'll see if history repeats itself and they're taking momentum into the playoffs. Next segment.
The day ahead.
In the world of the Green Bay Packers this Wednesday, what we're looking for today, I think, is the status of offensive lineman Brian Bulaga, who has been battling, of course, the knee injury all year, had surgery on his knee and a torn MCL, kind of got past that, not entirely, he's kind of been battling it all year. But anyway, new injury crops up against the Chicago Bears, sprains his ankle, had to leave the game. Don Barclay actually finished it. And now Brian Bulaga has been in the did not participate category in the injury report the past 2 days, Monday and Tuesday. Couldn't even go. It, you know, not even in the limited category, he couldn't even go. So his status is kind of in question for this upcoming game. You know, a former first-round draft choice of the Packers, you'd like to have him out there and be effective as long as he's healthy to be out there. And we really don't know at this point. I know Mike McCarthy has expressed some optimism, saying I think after Wednesday, I hope that they're going to have the offensive line intact or something along those lines, Mike McCarthy said during his press conference yesterday on Tuesday. So he seems to be encouraged. And if he is, you usually think that happens. But I think we're waiting for the proof today on Wednesday. The Packers will release their final injury report of the week. So it will not only have the practice participation level, it'll also have the game day status projections, the probable, questionable, doubtful, or out. So waiting to see that for Brian Bulaga in particular. I mean, there's 10 guys on the injury report in total. Kind of interested in seeing, you know, was Jared Aberderis ready to return after two games off? You know, there's other guys whose status you're interested in. Corey Linsley missed the last game. Maybe he's ready to return. But Brian Bulaga, definitely kind of the one most up in the air right now and kind of waiting for that later on Wednesday as the Packers hold their final practice. They'll hold a practice for all I know. It could be going on right now in Green Bay as if you're listening to the live edition of the show. And then they kind of get ready later in the day, board the plane and take off, spend the night in Detroit at the team hotel in advance of tomorrow's game. So that's where we're at right now in the world of the Green Bay Packers this Friday. And that'll do it. I'm so used to this, you know, the last edition of the show being a Friday before a Sunday game. I apologize. This Wednesday before Thursday's game. But enjoy the game, folks. We'll talk to you later. We'll recap the game on Friday. It'll be our next episode. My call to action, if you've not done so already, please give us a rating on iTunes, a rating and a review. It's the one small thing we ask. The show is free of charge, no subscription, no paywall. It's kind of the one small thing we ask for our listeners in return. If you could do that, we'd really, really appreciate it. But hey,
We'll see you later, folks. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you again on Friday. I leave you today with a song called All Inside by Kyle Hollingsworth on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.